Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In light of the number of folks that are losing their life to opioid overdoses, it killed 42,000 people in 2016, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The House has been on a tear, passing in excess of 50 bills, 58 to be exact, dealing with this epidemic. And joining us on the line at this point is Meridian Paulton, who is a research assistant in domestic policy studies with the Heritage Foundation. And we also have in the studio Frank Shaw, attorney and author of the book Signals of Transcendence, his story of dealing with his alcoholism and the difficulties in the passing of his son due to a heroin addiction as well as overdose. Welcome to the show, folks. We really appreciate it. So, Meredith, I know you've I know that you have looked at some of these bills. What is the breadth and depth of them, and are these all – I know there's some that are probably fluff, but they look – seems to be that there's some bills there that are really meaningful.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. There's been just a slew of bills, as you mentioned, nearly 60 bills passed in the last 2 weeks. Most of them a couple days ago, all in this big package. And most of those recent ones have been looking at Medicaid and Medicare and adaptation in there. So, for instance, there's been a focus on providing Medicaid assisted treatment to people who are addicted to opioids and doing that within Medicaid and Medicare, or ensuring that we're combating addiction in the first place. But I think that something important to note is that there's a difference between prescription drugs and fentanyls, which also get categorized with opioids. So you mentioned there's 42,000 deaths. About 20,000 of those deaths actually came from fentanyl and its analogs, not just from prescription opioids. So we have to really take a step back. And I think that these bills have begun to do that, but there's still a lot more work to be done.
Right. And well, I think we, you know, yes, the nomenclature, we've gotten to this generalization of opioids, whether it be heroin, fentanyl, you know, and Oxycontin, oxycodone, and so forth, and kind of lumped them all into one. If you had to pick one of the bills that you think has the most far-reaching effect, any thoughts on that?
I don't think there's any single bill that has a most far-reaching effect. What I think I can say is that there's a couple that jump out as being especially helpful. One is just a clarification of privacy laws. A lot of people don't realize that when in laws passed in 1996, that people with mental health problems can actually have those problems disclosed to their doctor. And of course, the patient has to consent to that. And but doctors can actually be aware of that information. A lot of people don't realize this and have perceived this as being problematic. However, that's something that's been clarified in these laws. So that's something that's already law. A lot of people didn't realize that. And so essentially what Congress did or what the House did with this bill is clarify that, yes, a doctor can ask you, you know, with your permission, can you tell me what your mental health history is and what's your, including your history with addiction. And I think that's incredibly helpful because then doctors know that they have the ability to get this information so that they can adequately treat their patients and not prescribe them something that they're going to get re-addicted to.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it only makes sense, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because we want to have the most patient-centered care that we possibly can. I think one area to watch out for is the federal government going too far, which is, of course, always something to be on the watch for, but overstepping in an area where, of course, recovery is so patient focused and needs to be so individualized, so localized. That means that these treatment plans need to also be very locally focused. They need to be coming from the state where that's an issue. So, for example, if I have a patient who's in a southern border state, the odds that they're addicted to some other illegal substance that came across the border unlawfully is going to be so much higher. So I'm going to have to think about that when I'm going into my treatment plan. And states need to be thinking about that when they're trying to prevent addiction in the first place. Is they're thinking about, okay, where did this actually come from? What substances are we dealing with? Versus if I'm in a state, for example, in the Northeast, there is more of a problem with actual addiction to prescription opioids. Right. And so when you're dealing in that kind of case, then you're going to approach this entirely differently, the methods that you're going to take. So I think in some of these cases, there's no egregious outstanding case of this in any of these bills. But there certainly is a theme of Congress wanting to react, because we see that there's these tens of thousands of deaths and we want to do something, but that can end up putting an imposition on the state to do something that may not be best for the state.
Right. Now, I'll put my skeptic hat on. This has a lot to do with the 2018 midterms coming up, right?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Congress wants to make sure that they're showing again, this is the impulse to react. In the House, there have been nearly 60 bills. In the Senate side, there haven't been so many bills, but there have been a couple of mega bills, so hundreds of pages of legislation coming out to try to show some kind of reaction. And, of course, this is a sweeping problem. Like I mentioned, you have the unlawful substances coming over, so you have to deal on the law enforcement side of it. On the other hand, you have treatment side. And so it's natural to want to have a lot of response to this. All that said, that's an awful lot of legislation to pass all at once, and I think that we would do well to be wary of that. But the sheer quantity does seem to point to a desire to ensure that these Congress are showing that they're reacting.
Absolutely. I mean, when you kind of look at the authors of some of these bills, they're very much involved in contentious elections, and it's not a coincidence, so to speak. Well, Meridian, exactly. Meridian Paulton, thank you so much. Research Assistant, Domestic Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation. We appreciate your insight. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. We'll be right back. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. We're talking about this situation with the opioid crisis, and we'll be talking to Frank Shaw, attorney and author of the book Signals of Transcendence, his story of dealing with his alcoholism, as well as the loss of his son to heroin. We'll be We're back, and we're talking to Frank Shaw, attorney and author of the book Signal of Transcendence, his story of dealing with his alcoholism. He's also lost a son to heroin. Thanks so much for joining us, Frank. You know, when you looked at some of these bills, and when you look at some of what's going on in Congress, oftentimes people are frustrated with not having a very directed approach into dealing with this and just kind of being straightforward. What has been your reaction to what you're seeing in this movement in Congress right now?
I just became aware of the bills that were passed on Saturday, I believe, and really didn't have a chance to examine them in great detail other than the one portion of the law enforcement aspect that should make it easier to intercept smuggled fentanyl and other synthetic opioids, which would make sense because out of the drug overdoses, I think there were three on LSU's campus, two within two blocks. All of them had fatal doses of fentanyl that were mixed in with
which is a synthetic.
Which is a synthetic, but it's deadly.
And it very deadly, and it's hard to get it on the scheduled list because they change one or two chemical components, and I think one of those bills deals with that issue where the AG can more easily get it on the scheduled list to have it outlawed by, you know, they're just changing a little bit of the chemical components, correct?
That's the way I understand it. I haven't actually seen it, nor is it finally passed.
Right,
yeah, but that would make sense. And the concern is obviously, you know, to give too much power to the attorney general. While at the same time, you want the input as to what goes on and what does not. But But that would be one of the major concerns.
You know, when we're talking about for the benefit of the listening audience, and you've done a lot of, reflecting, research, and review of data on these issues. When we talk about the opioid crisis, opioids are a drug like no other drug. And it's one that's, specifically heroin, and then heroin laced with fentanyl, is one that's becoming incredibly difficult to deal with as an addict. And, we basically, some of our successes have been putting people on another addiction.
Well, that's true. I think Suboxone is one of the treatments that you can then become addicted to as well. But once you get into that pickle, so to speak, I suppose that you don't have any choice but to go with what the treatment is. To my knowledge, this was the first time that I was ever aware of that Fletcher had ever used heroin. I spoke to him 2 hours before I left that Saturday of the Ole Miss game to go up there, mm-hmm. and to move the truck to block the parking spaces at the condo.
Fletcher, your son.
Yes, sir. And he did. And when we got there, so I was as surprised as anybody because, I have 7 boys, and they say, "Dad, how do you know these things?" And I went to public school. People ask me, "Where'd you go to high school?" I said, "I didn't go to high school. I went to EJ." So. But we did not have this, and so when you send him up to LSU, you think the worst that could happen is he could drink a bottle of Jack Daniels and fall over an oak tree root or something on a Saturday night, and that's not the case by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, the challenges are a lot greater today. Let's go to line one, talk to G. What say you, G?
Hello.
Hey.
Let me take you off the phone. I'm sorry. Nuala, it's funny, that I had an episode the other day, and it made me think about calling you, and then, your show, today, it's just a coincidence, but it's also strange, but I have a son, and he's got a heroin problem, and he there was a time when he got straight, but he falls back into it, and I see a lot of the same things happen with other people that I know that I talk about that are associated or know someone who's affected by it, and it's horrible, I see how hard it is for them to try and fight it and try and get away from it when they do want to get away from it, but the draw is so strong that it is so much easier to just give up, and I'm trying to help him best I can, and it's dragging me through hell, and I see my quality of life is definitely a lot in worse condition than what it was before I tried to help him. But, I just don't understand, why it happens. Do you think that we could fight this better from, with the government, with regulations? Because doctors, I've had injuries where doctors, legitimately don't want to give me pain medication because of what's going on. But on a street level, it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah,
and how do we?
My own personal opinion. I'm going to ask Frank for his, but my own personal opinion is I think we need to work hard at trying to find alternatives to opioids as pain medication, and whether or not that is Tylenol 4, 5, 6, whatever number it takes, in that respect, because I don't think we're managing it very well, and we've allowed. They disrupted DEA diversion when they're looking at how many pills doctors are actually prescribing to folks and getting very intrusive in that look-see. And they basically imploded it. And when you look at a lot of the folks that have left DEA, what they have said is that it's the manufacturers who sold the doctors a bill of goods. It's all about selling the pill, one bloody pill at a time. And mm-hmm. they've lost sight of what it is that they're trying to accomplish, and they've got doctors that are over-prescribing. Frank, your thoughts?
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. I mean, statistically, the Centers for Disease Control has cited statistics that 80% of all heroin users currently began on some type of prescription opioid, and so it morphs into that type of an addiction. And I feel your pain because I've been going to AA meetings for 31 years, and these days we are seeing a new category of person come in seeking help, and the type of things that that psychologists and medical doctors can't quite find the answer to, and in 30 something, I guess 100 years ago, whatever it was, Bill Wilson, found the response into having an effective and deep spiritual experience, which is why I wrote the book, was to convince my sons that they needed to look to what they could give to life and not what they could take from it, and to have that metamorphosis, and that was why I believe what I believed, and to tell them about that, and in the process of that, that's when Fletcher passed away. So your situation is not uncommon, and I don't know if you've tried treatment or not, but
Has a couple of times. It worked for a little while, and then it wouldn't. But exactly what you're talking about is exactly what I'm going through. I mean, it's horrible. You know, it's one of the hardest things in the world that I've ever seen anybody try and fight. And you know, and it started just like you were saying. You know, I guess as a recreational thing. You know, he took a few pain pills on the street. You know, maybe on the weekends, drinking with his friends or something. And then it got to a point where it got out of control, and he wanted to do that all the time. And then when the regulations stepped in, where less and less people were able to go out there and obtain these prescriptions and sell them on the street for money, it was harder to get. And I guess, hey, look, one of his best friends, you know, introduced him to heroin, and both of these guys, my son and his best friend, his best friend's in a wheelchair, ran into the back of a dump truck, and, you know, now he's quadriplegic. And I mean, it's just, I can't believe that these people, can you not see what you're doing to yourself? Well, why can we not stop?
Well, you know, the last time I was up here, it was from 10 to 12 on Saturday night with a show called Desperate Reality with the New Orleans Mission, talking to people out on the streets in New Orleans from 10 to 12 about their addiction and homelessness and going to the mission. And there are resources and people out there that have gone through this that will reach out and help you. And that story is not uncommon, but there is an answer. So,
well, we wish you the best, G. Stay the course. I mean, you know, every day he's alive is another successful day, and you just got to continue that on, and hopefully you get to some point of sobriety for your son. And we'll certainly keep you in our thoughts and prayers as well. And we'll continue to talk about this, and we want to hear from you folks. Give us a call, 260-1-
Thank you, guys. Keep the fight.
Okay, man. 260-1870 or Texas at 87870 as we continue this conversation. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. We're talking about a most recent Pew report that says that more than half the families in this country have a family member or a friend who's been addicted to alcohol and or drugs. And just recently, Congress has taken on about 58 different bills in dealing with the opioid crisis and the introduction of SANE, and talking about whether or not these bills are going to be meaningful. Having said that, we know that there's no one silver bullet panacea solution to this, right, Frank?
No, it's like everything in life. It's more complicated than it seems.
So let's go to line three, talk to Jay and Slidell. What say you, Jay?
Hey, Newell, thanks for taking my call. I lost a significant other that I was involved with for about 7 years a few years ago with an interaction overdose. And so I'm well aware of the dangers and the precautions that need to be taken when you're dealing with addiction. First of all, a lot of people aren't aware that, you know, when you're mixing these pills like Xanax and any kind of pain pill, it doesn't have an additive effect. It has a exponential effect. So just a little of either of those drugs can drop you pretty quick. The other thing that people don't realize is that taking Tylenol, these pills, a lot of these pills have Tylenol in them, with alcohol creates a toxin in your liver, and that will kill you long term if you do that over years. So the public isn't aware of a lot of these things. The other thing, unfortunately, Tylenol 3 has codeine in it, so that's an opioid as well. That wouldn't be the answer if we're trying to get people off of.
No, I was just
opioids.
Using it. I don't know medicine. I was just
using it,
add a number to it, take whatever right. out of it, you know, just find something else that's going to work. Yeah.
Well, I think the key to it right now is until they can get the black market, you know, beat back a little bit, because it's just ridiculous right now, is to make people aware that if they're addicted to a pain pill and can't get it anymore, if they go to a methadone clinic, you know, it's not the ultimate answer, but at least they wouldn't have to get it off the street. They will be able to get, you know, something to keep them from dying from withdrawals, you know, without any charge. The other thing is to make sure that the people that do legitimately need pain medication have it available to them on a restricted basis, like people with, you know, cancer or, you know, a recent major surgery. You know, there isn't really anything better to treat pain than stuff like OxyContin and stuff like that. If you need it legitimately, it's very effective. But if you abuse it, you can become addicted to it. So the public needs to be educated, and addiction is a powerful and cunning disease. There's no willpower to get you over it. It's, you know, stopping it and getting support.
All righty. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the insight.
And just as an aside on that, there are people who have received legitimate medical treatment that have no prior history whatsoever of addiction, and from U.S. attorneys and federal judges down to a client that I had that rolled a truck in Vicksburg and broke her neck, and they prescribed her OxyContin, and it led to disastrous results. So, I mean, that can happen, and you need to be – I've had shoulder surgery and dental surgery and things like that. You have to be upfront and open and honest with your doctor for limited purposes. If it's for pain, and my rule of thumb is if it makes me feel normal, then it's good. If it makes me feel loaded, I need to quit it, you know.
You know, I had the same reaction. I had a torn rotator cuff, and they gave me oxycodone or oxycontin, I don't remember which one it was. I did not like the way it made me feel.
Well, when and, I stopped it, taking it was terrible.
Well, in the first day I took it, I just felt like I was trying to jump out of my skin, and all I needed to do was sit on the sofa and watch TV, which is a favorite pastime for me, so it ought to be relatively easy, and I couldn't do it, and I was having ideations. And so I called him. I said, look, I can't take any more of these. I don't like the way it's making me feel. I can't explain it totally, but it just feels weird. And I don't need to feel weird on this medication. And he says, no problem. And I forgot what it was that he prescribed me. Never had a problem. I only took that for another 2 days, and then I started taking Advil.
Well, there are other alternatives that you can take. I had one son who's doing fine who tore an ACL, and he had a surgery where they drilled in the bone and whatnot, and he refused to take it until 2 o'clock in the morning. He texted me and said, bring me one of those, but we keep them under lock and key. So to some extent, they have to be used, but you really do need to rein it in.
And just, Frank, in your experience, there are just some people that can do that better than others.
Well, yeah. You have to be conscious of it. It was when I went into counseling, and the fellow looked at me, he said, you know what your problem is? I said, no, what? I'm paying you $70 an hour to tell me. But he said, your problem is you have no idea what your problem is. And he proceeded to explain to me, why don't you just have 2 drinks and stop? And I was like, well, I never did that ever.
Right.
And then he did a personality test, and I was a type A personality. I do everything like that. And he says, so do the stuff that helps you like that, and don't do the other stuff. And, you know, that thought had never occurred to me before, but I was on the backside of that.
But that's not easy either, because the body's physiologically looking for something more, right?
I guess. You know, the Centers for Disease Control also says if you start drinking before you're 15 or below, you're 7 times more likely to develop a substance abuse disorder. I'm the only person in my family, and I talk about this in the book. It's at signalsoftranscendence.com if you want to buy it online. And, you know, we would have these get-togethers in the vacant lot right between Judge Allen's house, who, and across the street was District Attorney Mamalidis's house. So we could have been arrested, convicted, and brought to jail without even leaving our neighborhood at the time. But that was the start of this, and that was back in the 60s when when you graduated from high school, you could be shipped off to Vietnam and come home in a box. So we had other things we were worrying about at the time, you know.
Absolutely. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. Congress is trying to tackle this opioid epidemic and have introduced in excess of 50 bills addressing any number of particular issues. And we'll continue this conversation when we return. This is Newell on WWE. Has your life been affected by a loved one who has overdosed? 100% of the respondents say yes. You know, and it's not unusual, Frank, more and more when you talk to folks about this issue. And if nothing else, this opioid crisis, and there are those that are saying it's a racial thing because it only affects, you know, Caucasians, and that's why it's getting the, you know, the notoriety or the attention that it's getting and everything else. But I'm going to tell you, I don't care what race, what socioeconomic group, what anything about a family, there's hardly a conversation that I have that they don't have, not a friend, someone in their family that's been affected by this.
Right, and the you know, the AA program has a calls for rigorous honesty, and I think it's time for everybody to get honest about this and address the situation as it really is, and deal with it. And you know, the truth is, I can hear Jack Nicholson right now saying, you know, you can't handle the truth. Well, we better be able to handle it, because we're going to have to deal with it one way or another. And the truth will also set you free. So if you face it, deal with it, and own it, then you can get on the other side of it and do something about
it. In your challenge in facing your alcoholism, what was it that what was the defining moment for you where the light switch went off?
Well, I talk about it in the book, and it's when I hit my knees and realized that me and free will, you know, that you can battle this and free will, that wasn't going to do it. I needed help, and I said the prayer that is the prayer that we need to say, and it was help, you know. I need help. And I hit my knees, and I found a Bible that my parents had left me, and opened to Romans 5:8. You know, it said, for God shows his love for us, for while we were yet sinners, while I was doing all this stuff, that Christ died for me. And that just kind of overwhelmed me. And I spent 2 hours on the knees of my crummy apartment on Zenith Street, down the street from Coach Revon's sandwich place.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got up, it was like somebody had lifted a rock off of me. It was in 1986,
you were a practicing lawyer, successful practice, and you know.
Well, I was still trying to figure that out. My role in life.
You know, every time I say that to a lawyer, they say, "Define success."
Well, define practice. I still haven't defined practice right yet. You know, it's like I'm still practicing, but one of these days maybe I'll get it right, or I'll quit before that happens. But I was doing defense work at the time, and I guess I should have been doing plaintiff's work, because I worked offshore, and like I said, I didn't go to high school. I went to EJ and pump gas at West Esplanade Shell and all these other places that we talked about, and God had been talking to me the whole time. From Jethro Tull's, he's not the kind you have to wind up on Sunday. I grabbed my mother and brought her in the 70s and said, sit down and listen to this. What do you think about that? You know, looking for some hypocrisy, and she looked at me. I'll never forget it. She looked at me and she said, that's what I've been trying to tell you.
So, all right, we'll continue this conversation. Give us a call, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. We're talking about, Congress has been introducing all of this legislation. Is it going to be meaningful? You know, we've been talking with Frank Shaw. He's an attorney and author of the book Signal of Transcendence, his story of dealing with his alcoholism, and ultimately ends up dealing with a son who loses his life to heroin as well. We'll be right back after this break. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. We're talking about the opioid crisis. Let's go to line one. Stephen, what say you, Stephen?
Hey, let me tell you about my experience. I had took opioids when I had shingles, and I hated it. Took it for a day or two and stopped. When I had a quadruple heart bypass, I told them I didn't want opioids. They gave them to me anyway. But by the time I got out of the hospital a week later, I was on Tylenol. But anyway, about 2 years ago, I ordered some Viagra online with you all, WWL, advertising them for $2 a pill instead of $12 a pill. Now I get 5 calls a day, and I keep saying, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. And then they go down this list of other drugs, what I like to take, including opioids. And they've offered me as many as 1,000 opioids for $1 a piece. All they'll do is send them to me from India. And, you know, I think maybe WWL needs to look at their advertisers a little closer. Because I get 5 calls every day.
I'm not familiar with any. I listen to WWL exclusively. I don't hear that ad at all.
Well, not anymore. This was about 2 years ago that I got them. And I still have them.
I wasn't here two years ago, so.
Yeah, I know you weren't there then. But anyway.
But I will look into it. Well, you know, we were just talking off air, Stephen, that there's this dark web out there where you can, you know, on the internet, get all kinds of different things from overseas, I guess. Frank, you were talking about it?
I don't know that much about it, but I've heard that that you order Xanax, for instance, by mail or fentanyl by mail, and it comes to a post office box, and this bill is supposed to authorize the Attorney General. I don't know exactly how to have more action monitoring those types of and the dark web, as I understand it, is that you use encryption.
That's a whole different thing with that. Thanks for calling in, Stephen. Appreciate your insight. Frank, final thoughts?
Well, yeah, I never heard that ad either.
No, I didn't.
To me, waking up stiff in the morning is still a good thing. So with 7 kids, but I would say if you wait to age 13 to talk to your kids, you've waited too long, and you need to age 13. You'd stand on the deck of the Titanic and go down with the men. So you need to address it earlier, and you need to address everything, not just alcohol.
All righty. Frank Shaw is the attorney and author of the book Signals of Transcendence, his story of dealing with his alcoholism. And he also, you know, suffered the tragic loss of his son to heroin. And, you know, when you think about these things, you learn to deal with life in many different ways as a result thereof. We'll be right back after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.